On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, it is WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, and with us, the one and only Dr. Gabe Merkin. Dr. Merkin, hello.
Hello, everybody.
And we start this time of year with the same thing, because if people don't hear it repeatedly, they may not take it seriously. And I still remember years ago, I ran into a woman who was a dermatologist. So we're talking at some event, and she says, well, what do you do? I says, well, I'm in college for radio. She says, can I ask you if you would talk about the importance of sunblock? Now, this was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I've mentioned it before, but when we talk with Dr. Merkin, he has really emphasized that this is something that is not just, oh, it'd be nice if you did. It's something that you really ought to wear this time of year.
Absolutely. The problem is that once you start getting several skin cancers, you're going to see a dermatologist every year for the rest of your life, because you're going to keep on getting additional skin cancers. So you send your younger years and you think you're safe and you're getting a lot of sun, and then bang, you start getting a few skin cancers, primarily on your face. And you spend the next 40 years going every year for another skin cancer. They just keep on, one cancer follows the other.
Yeah, I mentioned before my father had to have certain skin scraped off of his face and off of his shoulders, because for years he was out in the garden, no hat, no sunblock, no shirt, and he was red as a lobster. When he was doing this stuff, I said, you know, Dad, you might want to cover, and so what? Because he had done this all his life. And the last 10 years of his life, he had kept, nothing was cancerous, but they had to take scrapings of it and do biopsies and then put a little suture on it or something. And he had to wear like the little Band-Aid for a while. And I had run into people recently who are still going through the same thing, because they were out in the sun. One guy who runs a great deal was not wearing sunblock, and now he's paying for it.
Well, but the message is that you think you're going to get one skin cancer. No, your skin is damaged. Your genetic material in your skin is damaged, so you're susceptible to skin cancer all over for the rest of your life once you start getting them. So you get your first skin cancer, you've got to be checked almost every single year forever, because you're going to continue getting 2, 3, 4, 5 more and more skin cancers. You want to stay away from excess sunlight while you're younger, so you don't get into the habit of supporting a dermatologist forever.
You know, when I was first talking to that woman years ago, I thought, well, what influence do I really have? But back at the time, sunblock was not the big thing that it eventually became. And she was, I think, ahead of the curve on recognizing how many skin cancers could be prevented by doing that. And I thought, well, I thought originally, well, she want me to do a big speech about it. No, just remind people, wear sunblock. And I think that I've heard more people do that over the years. And if we had all listened to those people back then, maybe we wouldn't have the problems that we have now. But I think more people are actually getting it. And the stuff that I used to see on the store shelves was not as specialized and not as fancy. What type of sunblock would you recommend somebody get? Because they're not all equal, are they?
No, but you have to keep on putting a sunscreen on every hour and a half, every 2 hours. You stay out in the sun for more than a couple of hours with one application, you've got very little protection. Your clothes and your hands are going to remove the sunscreen, and so is your sweat. The message is, don't depend on one application of sunscreen to protect you. It loses its effect with time.
Yeah, but there's different types of sunscreen, right? What's the best type?
Yes, you want one that lasts, one that'll stay. You put it on your skin, and your skin stays greasy 2 hours later because it's still holding it. But most sunscreens that are comfortable, that are smooth on your skin, are washed away in an hour.
Is there something like zinc or whatever is best to get?
Well, zinc is a sunscreen itself, but because the metal. See, the key is that once the ultraviolet rays from the sun damage genetic DNA, and once you start damaging your skin enough to get one skin cancer. Your skin all over your body is damaged, so your skin is more likely to get skin cancer in the future. So your first skin cancer sets you up for many more to come.
Yeah. I was talking with Dr. Merkin before. I'd said, well, at least I was wearing the sunblock when I was out mowing the lawn. He says, well, remember, you got to reapply it. But I was out for less than 40 minutes because I don't have a huge lawn, so it helped out that way. But if I would forget to go out there, the back of my neck, believe me, would know the difference because I forgot one time. But
well, you should realize the best protector is a roof. The second best protector is clothes. And sunscreen is a weak third factor.
By the way, there are some people I know, it's like, well, they're a little follically challenged, so they'll wear a hat. You know what? Even if you've got the bushiest head of hair, wear a hat. Because your hair is not going to protect the skin of your scalp either. So
and you need more than a hat. You realize that when you get a skin cancer around your eyes, ears, nose, or mouth, it can burrow under the skin, and you can't look and you can't see the skin cancer because it's underneath the skin. So every single skin cancer around eye, ears, nose, and mouth is treated with Mohs surgery, where they cut a little bit, mm-hmm. and then you wait in the doctor's office for half an hour, and they analyze it, and they see there's a little skin cancer left. They cut again, and you may have six surgeries and a Mohs surgery in a morning, and you'll pay for each one of those six because we can't see skin cancers underneath the skin, and skin cancers around eyes, ears, nose, and mouth burrow under the skin. So the only way you can tell if the skin cancer is completely removed is to look at the skin 360 degrees around the removed specimen. And then if you see 360 degrees of clean skin, you stop and the patient is cured of that cancer. If you don't see 360 degrees of clean skin, you cut again and again and again. And I told you, you can go six times with one cancer. Just keep on extending the cut.
Yeah, it was not cheap when my dad went through it, and I'm sure it isn't now. So that's something to keep in mind. And yes, if I wear the type of hat that doesn't cover my ears, so I put sunblock on my ears. So there. So things to keep in mind.
Well, you should be putting a headband on covering ears. You should have a visor that protects your forehead and eyes. And if you're going to be really out in the sun for a long time, you really should have something over your mouth.
Yeah. We're with Dr. Gabe Merkin, and we want to move along to something that I don't know exactly how much this is going to continue because it was on all three of the nightly newscasts this past week on the networks. I've seen some other stories about it online from, you know, the usual credible sources, not some crackpot website just saying, hey, did you hear about this? But there's something called the New World Screwworm. It's a species of parasitic fly. According to the CDC, it completes part of its life cycle by feeding on the tissue of flesh of warm-blooded animals and people. And the flies are attracted to a wound on the body, opening in the nose, ears, mouth, where they lay eggs, or in a wound, obviously. The eggs hatch into maggots. They eat live tissue, causing worsening, often painful, foul-smelling wounds. It's typically found in South America and the Caribbean. What CBS News reported was that the government had been dumping thousands upon thousands of sterile flies so they would not be able to mate and lay the eggs for the larvae. However, south of the border, they're still in existence, and now it's moved into some of the cattle in Texas. They talked to one rancher who's going to probably take a huge loss this year because they cannot put the cattle to market because they've been infected by this. It doesn't seem like it's something that is a major thing yet. Some of the articles I read, don't worry about it too much. It's not going to be that big a deal. But CBS was saying, well, it's going to affect beef prices at the very least, any cattle out of Texas. Because if one ranch has it, they may say, well, we're going to quarantine. They haven't done that yet. But I'm just trying to see here. It says prevention would be to keep open wounds clean and covered, no matter how small a location on the body. sleep indoors with closed windows or screened windows. I mean, this stuff sounds like common sense, but not everybody is doing stuff like this. And in some parts of the world, people just are not culturally doing this. They say here that the female lays the eggs in the wombs. This can take 7 days. One female can lay 200, 300 eggs at a time, may lay up to 3,000 eggs during her 10 to 30-day lifespan. And after they feed for 7 days, they drop onto the ground, burrow into the soil, and emerge as adult screwworm flies. So is this really all that dangerous just yet? Or is this something that...
Well, it's a matter of, time that keeps on going. See, the screwworm can't put its babies into your body unless you have an opening. So an opening is your eyes, ears, nose, and throat. An opening is a wound, and a wound is a real susceptible thing. The screwworm can smell your when you have a cut or a bruise on your skin, and they bang, they go down, and if they can get onto your skin, they'll lay, and as you said, they'll lay 200 to 300 eggs with one attack on you, and then in 10 to 20 days, you have 200 to 300 worms in your body, and they're digging and digging and digging, and so you really have a real problem, and you can't just remove them and leave them around and throw them in your toilet, because you're their spreader. Then you have to put them into a closed container and seal them, like a plastic bag that seals, or a glass container that seals. So if you have this thing, you have to go to a doctor to make sure that you're not going to spread it to everybody else, so that these worms are removed from exposure to more humans. Frightening.
Yeah, and admittedly, this is why this is a bigger problem with cattle than it is human beings, but not impossible with human beings. If one cow has a wound and rubs up against another cow, just out there grazing, it could transfer it in that way. And if there's another wound, then the second cow is going to get it, and so on and so on. So the problem is the price of beef going to go up because of it? Possibly. Is it going to decimate
certain... If we have an epidemic, the answer is yes. That's correct.
So you may say, well, why are they worrying about this? Well, better to worry about it now than just ignore it for 2 years and then say, hey, why didn't somebody do something about it? Because they are trying to treat it in those cases. We're talking...
And there's one more important thing.
Oh.
We have insecticides, and the most used insecticide is called permethrin, and the studies are coming out now that chronic use of insecticides are associated with significantly increased risk for cancer. So if you're covering yourself with insecticides, you're increasing your risk for cancer. Not one study. There's many, many studies that are now questioning both insecticides and herbicides, the chemicals that kill plants and the chemicals that kill insects are associated with increased risk for cancer. So we have to use them with intelligence and distance.
Well, two things about that as an aside that speak to what Dr. Merkin just mentioned. I had seen a neighbor some years ago, had a bottle of Roundup in his hand, no gloves. He's wearing sandals, open-toed sandals. He's squeezing the trigger. It's running all over his hand, down his arm. It's getting on his foot. And then these are the people that will sue. Hey, I got cancer from Roundup. You're supposed to wear gloves. You're supposed to wash afterwards. You're supposed to not have any exposed skin when you're doing something like that. And don't spray it into the wind and it's coming back in your face. You have to use it responsibly the way it is on the label. Some people say, well, you know, it's these evil corporations. Well, it can be people who are just too lazy or stupid to follow the rules on the label. There's a reason they're there, and you have to follow something like that. The other, you mentioned insecticides. There are I remember these as a kid. There was a certain type of spray-on insecticides that you would use to keep mosquitoes away. You'd spray them on people's arms, and some people I've seen spray them in their face, even whether they've got sunglasses or not, they close their eyes, spray them. Should they not be using these things?
They should not be using these things because it is now established that, let me give you some data. Roundup has spent more than $2 billion in paid fines for causing cancer and everything else. They've been sued many, 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 many times. But they're making so much money because Roundup is so effective in getting rid of weeds that it pays for the company to keep on selling Roundup, even though right now, if somebody wants to sue Roundup, the chances are they're going to win because there's so many previous cases that have previously been levied against Roundup. Roundup is dangerous and causes cancer, and you should not be getting it on your body because at first it damages your immunity, and then your immunity stays damaged, and then you get cancer down the road.
But my point is,
it can damage one exposure. Putting Roundup on your hand can damage your immune cells, so you get a damaged immunity, which a doctor can tell just with a blood test.
Well, I'll give you an example. Like I said, that neighbor I saw years ago, he might as well have been taking a shower in it the way he was using it. If you misuse it, chances are you're going to be in trouble for it. And what I have a problem with is the people that sue and say, yeah, well, you know, I should be able to use it any way I want with it, but the label said don't do this, and you did. Well, it doesn't matter. I have cancer, so you got to give me millions of dollars. Like, for instance, I have a small cut on my finger here because I was dealing with chicken wire in the garden. And it would be really dumb if I were to be holding barehanded a bottle of insecticide, whether it's Roundup or any other, and just be spraying that and getting it on that cut. That's not a bright move, but there are people that will do something like that and say, oh, well, it's not my fault that I have a problem. The other thing I was more worried about, though, is the spray-on insecticides that people have used. I mean, I remember the commercials. I'm not going to mention any brand names, but I remember the commercials where they just show, like, mother is spraying it on the kid's legs and arms, and the kid's smiling. It's like, oh, this is great. Now the bugs won't bother me. And I'm thinking that's probably not a good idea to mess with that.
No, it is established, the association between insecticides and herbicides and cancer is pretty firmly established in the scientific literature.
It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendine and Dr. Gabe Merkin is with us. One of the things that Dr. Merkin has to talk about is lifestyle changes to delay dementia. 85% of Americans over 85 have some form of dementia. It may not be completely demented as we may recognize it, but they do have some effect on this. So what do you do to try to stop that?
Well, lifestyle is important, and the hottest area of research in medicine today is inflammation, your own immunity. In other words, this is going to surprise. When a germ gets into your system, you make cells and chemicals to kill that germ. And the problem is that your immunity, if it stays active all the time, can attack you. And inflammation, the term inflammation is associated with cancer and heart attacks and osteoporosis and arthritis and everything else, means that your immunity is turned on to stay active all the time. So your own immunity is damaging your own body. It's punching holes in your colon to cause cancer. It's damaging your arteries to cause heart attacks and so forth and so forth. So we know the factors in your lifestyle that turn on and turn off your immunity, so it won't stay active all the time. And interestingly enough, we now find out that your immunity is controlled by bacteria in your colon. Your colon has 2 to 5 pounds of bacteria. The last 6 feet of your intestines have 2 to 5 pounds. That's a trillion bacteria. And the good bacteria stay in your intestines and are perfectly happy eating the food that you eat. But the harmful bacteria punch holes in your colon. And that turns on your immunity because your immunity feels these bacteria invading your colon cells, and that causes inflammation. So we have all kinds of tests now to measure inflammation, and doctors can tell if your immunity is staying active all the time. And if your immunity is staying active all the time, you're at high risk for heart attacks and strokes and cancer and premature death and everything else. And this is exciting knowledge because we're getting there. We're learning how to turn on and turn off your immunity. Well, this is going to shock a lot of you. Mammal meat turns on your immunity. Why does mammal meat turn on your immunity? Well, you recognize an invading germ by the sugar proteins. They're called sialoproteins on something that's invading you. If a bacteria has different sialoproteins, your immunity says, oh, that's not part of you. I'll have to attack it. So you send out cells and chemicals to kill it. So here you are now, and you don't want to be exposed to factors that are going to turn on your immunity and make it too active. Well, humans are mammals, and humans used to be equal to mammals. But millions of years ago, humans had a genetic mutation where they got larger brains, and the larger brains are the reason that humans, Homo sapiens, rules the Earth. So we rule the Earth because of that mutation. And a study out of the University of California in San Diego 40 years ago showed that this is an incredible study. They took human muscle, ground it up, and sent it along a Cepheidex column and separated out 1,451 different proteins. And then they took cow's muscle and separated out 1,451 proteins. But they found one protein in cow's muscle that was different from the protein in human muscle. The human muscle is called NEU5AC, and the cow's muscle protein was called NEU5GC. That's the reason for our larger brains. So we rule the Earth because of this mutation. But when you eat mammal meat, you're getting this NEU5GC, and it attaches to your cells. Wow. So now your cells have a protein that isn't you, NEU5GC, and you make cells and chemicals to attack and kill your own cells, which to cause inflammation, turn on your immunity, and now your own immunity is going to damage your arteries and your cells to cause cancer, your arteries to cause heart attacks, your brain to cause dementia and everything else. So suddenly we found out that you shouldn't be eating mammal meat. And remember, the cattle industry makes this controversial because they're spending billions of dollars every year to tell you that mammal meat is healthful. Now, you don't have this NEU5GC in turkey or fish or in chicken or what have you, but you do have it in mammal meat. So you really should cut back on mammal meat. The other thing you should never do is you should not be deep frying, cooking without water. When you cook without water, the protein binds, the sugar binds to the protein to cause chemicals called advanced glycation end products that have been proven repeatedly to cause cancer. In other words, when you deep fry, you're cooking without water, so you form these chemicals called advanced glycation end products. And all you have to do is give these chemicals, the AGEs, advanced glycation end products, to animals, and they get cancer at a significantly increased risk. So we've cut back on mammal meat dramatically, cut back on deep fried food and sugar. Sugar is a major, major, major problem. High blood sugar. 70% of all Americans are now diabetic. 70%. And so you don't want to eat sugar. And the most dangerous form of sugar is in sugar in liquid. When you eat sugar in a liquid, you get immediate high rise in blood sugar because liquid sugar can pass right into your intestines. But solid sugar is first kept in your stomach, and only liquid is allowed. Liquid soup is allowed to pass into your intestines. So when you eat an orange, for example, It takes 4 hours for the orange to get through from your stomach to your intestines because you don't want solid food in your intestines. When you drink orange juice, do you know you get exactly the same rise in blood sugar that you get from Coca-Cola?
Mm.
So you shouldn't be eating, drinking any fluid with sugar. So let me do it again. Sugar added to food and drinks is harmful. It turns on your immunity. Mammal meat turns on your immunity. And cooking without water makes known carcinogens. And you certainly want to eat huge amounts of plants because all plants contain fiber, and all moving living mammals, everything that moves and does not have fiber. And fiber lowers cholesterol, lowers high blood pressure, lowers high blood sugar, turns down inflammation, and does good. So that's why you're hearing so much about a plant-based diet. Plant-based diets block inflammation to help prolong your life.
Well, something else I want to ask you about that, because I have a ceramic frying pan now. I had the Teflon. I got rid of that. I got the ceramic based on conversations we'd had on this program. But I had been frying salmon. And, of course, the place smells like salmon for the next 3 days. I don't care if all the windows are open. And my cousin was showing me, no, this is how she makes it. So she just bakes the salmon. And I've started doing that. Number one, no fishy smell. Number two, so you're telling me salmon is good for you, but if you fry it, it's not doing you as much good as you bake it.
If you deep fry it, you don't want to fry it without water. The best place is an air fryer, yeah. When you cook in water, it's safe. Nobody is complaining about that. It's perfectly, you're not doing anything harmful by cooking in water.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, if I'm doing that, it may also explain why that the odor of salmon would stick around for like 3 days or so. When I bake it, there is no odor of salmon. It just smells good when you get it out of the oven, and it tastes good, and it's not burnt in the same way that it might be if you fry it.
Advanced glycation end products that are proven carcinogens.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it seems like somewhere between 3 and 5 years ago, everybody started getting air fryers for Christmas, and I think the last person on earth that does not have an air fryer. But I looked into getting it, and I figured, well, I'm probably not going to use it all that much now that I'm doing the salmon in the oven versus putting it in the pan or things like that. I don't know that I would have as much use as some people have, but I know some people that eat very healthy and everything they make is in an air fryer. They do not fry or put anything in the oven.
A quick stir frying, I don't think, is very harmful, but deep frying is. French fries are you should be avoiding them. French fries are carcinogens.
Of course, because they taste that good, we have to avoid them. Of course, they can't be good. That's Murphy's Law. Now, but here's the thing: I also get ground turkey as opposed to ground beef. And I do fry that, but I don't put a ton of oil in. I just use the natural fat within the turkey when I fry that. And, you know, I don't burn it. And sometimes I add vegetables along with that. That's probably not all that bad compared to some things, right?
That's true. That's a good point. As stir frying, quick frying, does not have the implications of deep frying. Deep frying means you're cooking without water. Stir frying quickly, you may not get large formation of advanced glycation end products because you still have water in the food, and the water in the food is still protecting you.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but most things that you get at a county fair are not too good for you, but are you really surprised to find that out? They may taste fantastic, but they're not necessarily good for you.
That's right, because it tastes good doesn't mean it's healthy, right?
It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, Dr. Gabe Merkin is with us. There's a story out from ABC News. U.S. measles cases surpassed 2,000 for the second year in a row, again, according to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, when you think there's over 33 million people in the United States and only 2,000, that doesn't sound so bad. But so far in 2026, 2,030 confirmed cases have been reported in 38 states in the District of Columbia. By the way, Pennsylvania, one of those 38 states. Just 10 measles cases were reported among international travelers so far this year, so it's worse here than it is there, relative. Last year, 2,288 confirmed measles cases were reported for all of 2025. Prior to this, measles cases had not surpassed 2,000 since 1992. So I'm guessing we're not getting the kids vaccinated for this.
That's correct. And I think it is inexcusable that somebody would say, don't vaccinate, because you can get the same immunity with a vaccination that you get with an infection, and it's safer to get the vaccination than it is to get the infection, and the germs are on. We had eliminated measles, and it's coming back. And if we keep on hearing this nonsense about avoid all vaccinations, the data unquestionably shows that you get an occasion a serious reaction to a vaccination. But the immunization is 100,000th, 1,000,000th as common a serious side effect as the disease itself. And remember, measles can be can have serious side effects, although the incidence with measles is not high with these serious side effects. Incidentally, the key to diagnosing measles, and I think everybody should hear it, everybody that's more than 60 years old knows what I'm about to say, well, more than 100, more than 80 years old at least. But anyway, measles has cop-like spots. If you get sick and you look in your mouth and you see little white dots in your throat and tongue and mouth, those are called COPLIC, complex, and that's that's how we diagnose measles, by physical exam. So if you get chills, muscle aches, a rash, a red itchy eyes, a headache, and you open your mouth and you see dots, the odds are overwhelming that you now have measles. And you could have avoided getting measles by getting your immunization. Children should get the childhood. I mean, whooping cough and measles were gone. We cured them. We prevented them by immunizing people. And now we have people telling us not to get immunization, which I think is unconscionable, because it's hurting the greater percentage of the population. And yes, people can get a reaction to a vaccination, but the serious reactions are 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 500,000. The serious reactions to the disease are many thousand times that.
I don't know if they had it in other parts of the country, since it was filmed on New York City streets. I'm guessing the campaign was specific to my area where I grew up in metropolitan New York. But around when I was about 8 years old, so we're talking 1968, there was a campaign on TV where you saw a cartoon umbrella, and it was from the perspective of a child walking down a street that would have been holding the umbrella. And they talked about something called the rubella umbrella. Rubella is German measles, and there was an outbreak of them in and around metropolitan New York in the mid-60s and into the early 70s. And the problem was that, again, people were not vaccinating their children on this. I just looked it up, and the Google AI says rubella, also called German measles, is a highly contagious viral infection best known for causing mild red rash and swollen lymph nodes. While the illness is typically mild or asymptomatic in children and adults, it is extremely dangerous for pregnant women, as it can cause miscarriage or severe birth defects. And I'm guessing that it was far worse then than what we're going through now, because we had to remind people, hey, you won't want to get this vaccination for your kids, otherwise you're going to have to deal with this, and that we got it down to 2,000, and now it's starting to creep up. It's not the end of the world, but it's not a bad idea to remind people, hey, there's a reason we have the vaccination. And it's been used for decades now, so it's not like, oh, this is something new and we're scary here.
And some of the people who are saying don't vaccinate have no training in medicine, one of them in particular did horrible in all his academics, probably has not been able to read scientific studies, because he certainly doesn't read studies, and he's dictating the health of this country.
By the way, some of the complications for a woman who is exposed to this, and transmission is easily spread through the air when an infected person coughs or sneezes. So, say one of your children and you're pregnant, and you could get it in that that particular way. The birth defects that can cause are deafness or vision problems, such as cataracts, heart defects, and intellectual disabilities or growth issues. So for that reason alone, especially if you have kids, you ought to be getting them vaccinated, especially if you intend on having more kids, just to show you that.
I think that's a very important point. German measles in pregnancy causes a high incidence of miscarriages and birth defects, yes.
So get your kid the rubella umbrella, meaning the vaccine. Something else that's going on, this is not as big because about a month and a half ago, this is all I saw on the network news every night. Didn't matter which network you were watching, didn't matter which cable system you were watching. Ebola, a deadly Ebola outbreak is continuing to spread across the Democratic Republic of the Congo, with global health officials warning that we are still behind. As of Wednesday, this last Wednesday, two from when you're hearing this, 363 cases and 62 deaths have been confirmed, according to the Congo Ministry of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In neighboring Uganda, 15 cases and one death have been confirmed. The environment is marked by fear. Doctors working with them have said the outbreak had a big start. We're still behind, but we're catching up, according to the World Health Organization during a press briefing also two Wednesdays ago, as you're hearing this. Recently, WHO had ruled out hundreds of suspected cases after investigation, although some local health officials suggested that community transmission may be slowing. Many public officials and specialists cautioned that the data is incomplete. The specialist also noted that contact tracing is weak and far below the level needed to contain the outbreak, especially when you have people doing international travel. But it's interesting that in the measles story, we're talking fewer international travelers to the United States by percentage had measles. Here, Ebola is not a major problem yet, but it can be, and it's a good thing they're jumping on the wagon now
and
to do something.
And it's frightening because Ebola causes organ damage. If you get infected with the Ebola virus, you can have liver failure, heart failure, kidney failure. It can damage every organ in your eyes. It can damage every organ in your body.
Yeah, things to keep in mind. There's a couple other short stories here that we can just mention here and get Dr. Merkin's reaction on them. And I included these simply because, A, get a second opinion. B, doctors are not always right. Sometimes you have to be your own advocate. And Dr. Merkin has had that theme. If you've listened to these programs throughout the years on WRTA, he said that not every doctor necessarily knows what they're doing. This is a story from People magazine. Woman says a doctor told her to cancel a scan. Then she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She was diagnosed with cancer after doctors told her she didn't need any more medical scans. She's 49 years old and from England. She was experiencing heavy bleeding. She decided to call the doctor. While on the phone, she was advised to make an appointment for an internal scan. However, when she visited the GP, she was told, no, you don't need that. She asked if I was having menopause symptoms. I said yes. She told me to cancel the scan, said I didn't need to go. She was prescribed menopause medication for the bleeding. It ultimately stopped, but it returned when her condition didn't improve. She was finally sent for scans in May 2025. At that point, the bleeding was severe. I had asked for the scan when it was finished. I think I said I may be bleeding. They said it was just chilling on the probe. I stood up, and it flew out up the walls on the floor. They asked if I normally bled this heavily, and I said no. She was bleeding so much she was rushed to the emergency room for her appointment. She lost a lot of blood. After 20 minutes, nurse came in and managed to help her back to the bed. While in the hospital, she underwent a biopsy, had to wait weeks for the result. July 2025, she was diagnosed with stage 4 cervical cancer. If she had not had the scan, one of the practitioners said, you'd probably be dead by now. And it's amazing to me. First, do no harm, I understand, but what would have hurt if they just said, oh, you're scheduled for a scan, go ahead with it?
Well, let me tell you something. It's not so easy being a doctor. There are problems. you can get too many x-rays. X-rays cause excessive radiation from x-rays can cause cancer because radiation damages genetic material to increase cancer risk. So the doctor says, well, I don't want to give you more x-rays. In this case, he was wrong because this woman had cancer, and the earlier you diagnose cancer, the less likely it is to has already spread, so the greater your chance for getting successful treatment. So this is a very sad case where the doctor said, I don't want to give you radiation, but she lost.
And there's another story here. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but we'll put a link on the podcast page, and you can read that at WRTA.com with the podcast of this program with Dr. Merkin. Pregnant woman was diagnosed with cancer. Doctor said her baby may not survive. A second opinion changed everything. She and her husband wanted the child. They said, no, you better abort the child or you're not going to survive. The child certainly will not. And they were able to do something localized, and the child is just fine, and so is she by now. But the point was, if she had listened to the first opinion with something like, well, this is radical, but you should do this. She said, no, I want to talk to somebody else. And the somebody else said, let me show you how you can have it both ways. And now she has a healthy child, and she's healthy. So.
Right, and it shows it's not so easy because the doctors, they have to make tough decisions every day.
But, you know, the thing that gets me, and I read this in all the literature, and I have no doubt, I've believed it for years, and I think you've talked about it as well. It's bad enough if you go in and say, I think this, I think that, and the doctor dismisses it. If you're a woman, chances are far more likely the doctor's going to say, eh, it's nothing. There seems to be that prejudice that a lot of doctors have. Even female doctors are going to have, when a woman complains about something, nah, it's probably nothing. If a man complains, well, maybe we'll look into it.
Well, a doctor can be guilty of ordering too many tests, too. You know, it's a decision each time. Should I order this test or not?
Yeah.
And money. What about these new cancer drugs that are, I mean, you can pay $30,000 a week for some of these new drugs.
And most people are not
and
ever going to be able to afford it.
And insurance won't cover it because right. The price is so high.
WRTA Weekend, Doug Herendeen. We're with Dr. Gabe Merkin. This is a story. I'm trying to see where I had this. Don't have the link on this one, but we'll include it on the podcast at WRTA.com. Alzheimer's patient gets back speech, bladder control, and memory in groundbreaking drug trial. After a decade of cognitive and functional decline, an 80-year-old patient with advanced Alzheimer's disease showed remarkable signs of progress. All it took was a single dose of an experimental hallucinogen to get her speaking more than she had in years, and that's just the top of the list of her improvements. Psilocybin? How do you pronounce
it?
Oh, psilocybin.
Psilocybin.
I'm sure there are people who are around in the 60s that recognize it immediately. The psychedelic component of magic mushrooms had previously been touted as an effective treatment for depression, anxiety, addiction, and PTSD, but now researchers say it has potential to be used in Alzheimer's intervention as well. In the case study published in Frontiers of Neuroscience, researchers focused on an 80-year-old Japanese-American woman with Alzheimer's. Her condition declined over the last decade and was reduced to urinary incontinence, speaking in single syllables, and dependence on caregivers for mobility support. She was given a 5-gram dose of magic mushrooms. During the initial phase, she was agitated, sweated profusely, and entered into prolonged sleep state that suggested unconsciousness. But around hour 19, she began speaking in full sentences, recalling life events she had been able to articulate for years. In the days and weeks that followed, more incredible changes emerged. She regained urinary continence, even in the evening, began dressing herself, was able to make eye contact and maintain it, remember social interactions, emotionally respond to others, and hold lucid conversations. Miraculous as the mushrooms may seem, the study authors noted that the patient's improvements were temporary, and it did not reverse her disease as her neurodegeneration remained. They did not specify exactly how long the improvements lasted. Doctor, I don't know if you would have ever read a book called Flowers for Algernon. Or you saw the movie Charlie with Cliff Robertson years ago. The idea was there was a gentleman who was, as we would say now, slow, as they would have said at the time, retarded, not as a pejorative, but as a medical condition. And in the movie and in the book, the idea is that he is given some experimental drug. And not only is he becoming more quote-unquote normal, now he's begun the usual intelligence to a super IQ. And the problem with it is it doesn't last. He becomes quote-unquote normal. He becomes almost super normal in his intellect and interaction, but he starts to regress. And by the end of the book and the movie, he's right back where he was. And it's just a heartbreaking fictional story. However, this is something that sounds very similar, and this is real life. So in other words, you think, oh, this is great. All we have to do is give somebody who has dementia this, and they're magically themselves again. And that's not the case. And like you pointed out, we were talking off air during the break, this is only one case. We don't know how effective this would be in general use against people or for people that have had Alzheimer's. Had you heard of anything else like this?
Yeah, we have lots of things that are magic breakthroughs that are not. They come out as magic. This is a scientific paper that says, well, let's go set up a study now with a large number of people, and let's see if it'll get people better with loss of memory. And you can't really depend on a study of one person, because who knows what happens with one person. But if you get a study of 100 people and it shows that a significant percentage of these people on the drug got better, that's exciting. And that means that the person who discovered this will become fabulously wealthy and will retire at a young age. That means that a lot of people will get better, and a lot of people won't be able to afford the treatment because it's beyond their income, because new drugs are incredibly expensive.
You know, I've heard of magic mushrooms for years. It may not surprise some people who listen to this program often. I don't have any experience with illicit drugs in my life whatsoever. Sorry. Never went there. Not sorry that I didn't. I have known people, and if you went to college, you knew people that had done a little more experimenting than the rest of us. And I have to wonder, at certain mind-altering drugs, we always talked about how the side effects would be when these people got older, how out of it they might get if they were doing this stuff at a young age when they had no symptoms of Alzheimer's and certainly would be, quote-unquote, too young to be affected in that way. But I have to wonder, a number of the population that had experimented with drug use and magic mushrooms, is there any study as to what they're like now that it's been decades?
No, we don't have any other evidence that magic mushrooms are any cure for any disease at this point. But this is suggested, and it's certainly worthy of a study, because the person who did that first paper may become very wealthy, is getting a part of the patent, and a lot of people may get better. But the odds are that a one-person study isn't going to show anything, and that we will have no benefit down the road at all.
Yeah, I'm just because I think, unfortunately, in real life, it's not like the TV show Taxi with the character of Reverend Jim, who had, shall we say, indulged in a great deal of illicit substances back in his college days, and he was very far out there because of it, and it was played for laughs. But I think we've all met people like that. I do have to wonder, though, if people were experimenting with some of these mind-altering things when they were very young, are they either, some of them, I think, obviously are not protected and are having difficulty in their later life. I have to wonder if one or two of them may actually have a more cognizant mind now because of it, but we'll never be able to make that connection because we don't know. It's not something we've studied.
Well, I hope this study is supported by other studies, because everybody will benefit from it. But you have to be suspicious until we have more data.
That's why we always say, and this is something I fault the media for, not medical science and not doctors. The media will get a story like this and run and say, oh, we've found a cure for all, and no, we have not. We haven't even found a treatment for it. So that's something to keep in mind. Doctor, you and Mrs. Merkin still doing the bicycle, right?
Yes, we are. Our lives depend on it now, because that's our activity. because every day we talk about if you stop at being active and lie in bed and do nothing, you can die within a couple of years of heart failure because you need to move all the time to keep your heart strong.
You have a tandem recumbent bicycle. You sit down close to the ground on it.
Down.
How many miles a week are you doing still?
We're doing 23 miles every single day, 7 days a week.
Well, and you're coming up on your 91st birthday later this month.
Very soon.
The 18th,
yeah.
So happy birthday early. You think the activity might have had a good part to play in your longevity then?
Well, there's no question in my mind, because everybody in my family is diabetic. My brother and sister are both diabetic. My father died of diabetes. I chose the wrong parents genetically.
It shows you that the activity can do a lot more good.
Yes, the studies on inflammation is a huge... There's hundreds and hundreds of papers on inflammation and overactive immunity shortening your life. And that's the lifestyle. No mammal meat, no sugar-added foods, no sugar drinks, period. No fried foods. And a plant-based diet. Everybody now agrees a plant-based diet is healthier. There's no debate.
Dr. Gabe Merkin, we're out of time, but we will have the podcast up in just a few. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.